Today's program has been brought to you by GreatBrewers.com, a social media marketing platform dedicated to promoting the world's great brewers and the beers they create. For more information, visit GreatBrewers.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's October 22nd, 2013. We're in the middle of Cider Week, New York, and I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 and the Good Beer Seal in New York. We've got a special co-host tonight.
Well, hey, Jimmy, how are we doing today?
My good buddy, Sean McCain from the Bronx Brewery.
Back again. You can't keep me away.
You're a talented guy. You've been in beer a long time, and used to be an actor, too, didn't you?
I tried. I was so successful that I now sell beer, so we know how that went.
But you're crazy. I mean, even though it's Cider Week, you know, we can still talk. You guys are... Are you opening a brewery soon?
Yeah, December. We will be pumping out the jams in the South Bronx and Port Morris this December and putting in a canning line. So we'll be all of our beers will be available in a delicious 16-ounce pint formula. And we have a lot of barrel aging that we're doing. I actually brought one sample of our barrel aging beer that we might sample, depending on if we get through the ciders or not. We'll see. But
looking forward to it.
Yeah.
We got some other special guests. It's Cider Week in New York, and one of the little places in Queens that's probably doing some of the most events for Cider Week, it's Ben from Queens Kickshaw. Ben, just get a quick shout-out.
How's it going, Jimmy?
All right, so how's Cider Week been for you?
Oh, Cider Week's been incredible. It's been absolutely insane. People are coming in, they're like, where's the cider? Serious.
And how many ciders are you serving, either on draft or by the glass?
Right now, we got 6 ciders on draft. We're pouring another 6 from bottles by the glass, and we have about 35 or so by the bottle only.
All right. Wow, that's pretty darn impressive.
Let's start off with our first guest. We've got Begonia and John. They're here selling Astorias ciders from Spain. You guys, tell me your full name and tell
My
me what you guys are doing.
Begonia Medio.
And then this other guy.
And I'm John Bellevue Flores from Rowan Imports.
So we're going to get straight to the chase. This is Cider Week. You know, GreatBrewers.com has been behind it. You know, there's Glenwood up in the Hudson Valley that really helped create this by focusing on, you know, apple farmers and thinking of ways for value-added products. So there's a lot of deep stories behind Cider Week. And each year we've done a Cider Week show. We've had great makers like Steve Wood from Farnham Hill, and actually on November 12th we'll do a live show just with him.
Oh, really?
That's going to be awesome.
Oh,
he's coming back for the great Union Beer portfolio tasting that's happening.
That's awesome.
That's going to be great. And we've had guys like Greg Hall, who is Goose Island, who's moved on to doing Virtue now. So we've had a lot of really interesting people on the show. This one, I think we're going to talk more about the culture of cider. We also have Sam Smith VII from England, whose family brewery is also making an organic cider, Sam?
That's correct.
And we had you on a few years ago, and it's nice to have you back.
It's good to be back here. Good to see you, Jimmy, yeah.
So what are you doing? You're doing like a stage in New York, learning the ropes a little bit?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, so my family business is Samuel Smith's Brewery from the UK. We're one of the oldest breweries in the UK, and we make cider as well. And I'm planning to succeed my dad and my uncle at running the business in a few years' time. And for now, I'm spending 3 months out here in New York. I've got to say, I'm absolutely loving it over here. A lot of hot chicks and a lot of beer to be sold.
So, yeah, you're working real hard, aren't you there?
So, sure, I think that the family brewery might lose their son. He might just stay in New York, right?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, there's got to be a danger of that, absolutely. Life is pretty good out here, I've got to say. And really enjoy the city out here, really enjoy selling beer. And maybe there won't be any return. Yeah.
You're going to be moving all of Tadcaster to the Lower East Side, perhaps Soho?
Yeah, why not?
Perhaps the Bronx. I mean,
oh yeah, come up to the South Bronx. We got room for you guys.
So we've got a lot to talk about, and at some point we'll also talk about Sam Smith. They have a nice organic cider. But let's dive right into Spain. I mean, John, tell us your story. I mean, you went backpacking or something and discovered with your mother first.
That's right.
Found a lover or something.
Basically, a few years ago, I spent a lot of time abroad, specifically in Spain. And one of the reasons I did that is I've had some family who've lived in Asturias, which is the northernmost province in Spain. And in the course of that travel, I became acquainted with Sidra, which I've since fallen in love with. And
Is that mistress, or is that the name of cider?
It's I can't say.
Sorry.
It's could be both.
I heard she's a tart sometimes.
And we've decided to bring it over, my brother and I, and with the help of Begonia Medio, who's here to my right. I think without her, probably there would not be a Rowan, because when we first decided to visit the region, she was the one who helped us set up the meetings and translate and kind of run interference. So we're indebted deeply to her, and we're very grateful.
Well, one question I have is, so, like, you know, you're from a traditional cider making region, Asturias, yeah, and Spain. I mean, tell us what the culture is like, and, you know, your family background.
Yeah, for example, my father used to make cider. He's the traditional natural cider that we have. And, for example, when my family has the house, our home around is full of cider house. Everybody has apple trees, and with the apples, of course, we make cider. So for us in Asturias, cider is part of our culture. We all drink cider. 80% of our production is sold in Asturias. We drink a lot.
So people actually do drink the cider in your region?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. 85%, that's a lot. Did you bring any of the 15% that leaves tonight? No?
We did 80%.
So, John, how did you get Asturian cider here then? I mean, if they're drinking at all, it's not like it's not a dying craft that no one in their country is drinking anymore. Like, you know, they discovered Saison DuPont 30 years ago, and they were about to shut down production.
No,
it's not the same
case. From. I mean, it's only expanding. We convinced the producers that it would be a good market to expand to, and I guess we made the case that they'd take a chance on us, and they did, and we're very happy they did, because the reception here in New York has been wonderful. And we're just encouraged to bring over more ciders, and we've since, in fact, expanded to include ciders from other regions of the world, and it's just growing. We're very happy with what's happened so far.
Let's go back. So there's this traditional cider region. It's new to me, too. I mean, we've heard of Basque ciders. I mean, there's one I like, Isategui. We've had French ciders, and also we know from Greg Hall at Virtue, he went and he hung out with the best cider makers, Oliver in England, and the DuPont in France, and some people in Spain who I don't know who he hung out with. But, you know, tell us what inspired you. I mean, you're holding back on us.
Well, I don't know. What inspired me, I think a lot of it was an effort of last resort, to be honest. I wasn't quite sure what else to do, and I started with my love of cider, first and foremost, and my love of travel. And I was looking for many years kind of how to combine those two interests. And
nice job. That's what it's all about, right? Finding your passion.
Right, thank you. That's kind of, the only answer that we could come up with.
Little coin, that's great.
Yeah, so it was an import company, and that's how it was born, so...
John, I correct me if I'm wrong. Maybe this was off the record. I don't know. But wasn't there something else that you wanted to do instead of become an importer and distributor of cider, but you couldn't?
That's right. Yes. The original idea was to open a cider-only bar. And we gradually came to realize that, one, I had no, or my brother had no cider, or I'm sorry, bar business experience. And so we decided... professionally, that would be pretty close to suicide to start a bar in New York with no experience. So we thought, we'd do the import thing. Also, I guess it's worth saying that a few years ago, we couldn't find very many ciders here in the States that we thought were good. I mean, I'm sure they were available, but we thought our time would be better spent bringing the ciders over rather than selling what was available.
Let me ask Sam. So, Sam, you know, you're English, and we've actually met a lot of people from England that like, you know, tart Spanish stuff. Because the style of cider is very different, right?
Yes, it's quite.
It's
quite
tart. Yeah. It might be barnyardy. I mean, your experience now, you know, as an Englishman, I mean, what do you think of Spain? Do you think of Spain as a place that makes cider?
Look at that smile.
Nothing like a smile for radio.
Putting him on the spot.
That's right. Well, you got me on the spot there, Jimmy. To be honest with you, I'm very ignorant about Spanish cider. It's not something I know anything about. I'm a brewer. I know quite a bit about beer. But I was at your cider tasting at your very cool bar on Saturday, and I tasted a few Spanish ciders. And I've got to say, I was very impressed. I hadn't had anything like it before in my life, but I thought it was pretty cool what they're doing over there.
Please tell me we have an example of Spanish cider right here to drink. Did anybody bring a sample? Or can we drink some cider?
I'm sorry to say that I meant to, and I left the house, and I totally forgot. Oh. I'm very sorry to
I'm
say
so
that.
Sorry.
I would pitch the brands, though. I mean, you've got, what, Castanon, which is very... I mean, one thing, the reason I asked and Sam, too, is, like, you know, people don't really think of Spain as cider, but only the last couple of years, you guys, you and your brother Anthony, as Rowan Imports, you've made me think of... Wow, Spain is right up there with other cider producers, you know? I mean, Ben, I don't know, you've at Queen's Kickshaw, you know, you've been featuring a lot of ciders. Have you brought in any of the Astoria ciders or Basque ciders?
Yeah, we actually have three different Basque ciders, and the Castañón from Asturias, as well as the Villa Cubera from Asturias, and which other one are we getting?
Which one?
The Valverón.
The sparkling. Yeah. So how do you pitch that to your customers? Do you let people just taste it, or you have a flavor profile?
You know, obviously we're a little bit more of a beer bar than a cider bar, but we're definitely kind of straddling both at the moment. Certainly, you know, people who like sour beers, people who like tart beers or funky beers, people who you know, are really thinking about what they're going to drink with their food, are the people that we specifically target for selling the Spanish ciders to.
One thing I've noticed, maybe you've noticed this for Sean and John, this is the third year of Cider Week New York, and the first year it was like, wow, it was just great to have a wide variety of ciders. I got to try English ciders, French, Spanish. I think we should, Dave, why don't you pop the Sam Smith organic cider? And now this year it's like, wow, some of the American ciders that I was drinking, they seem fruitier than I remember. And maybe it's because of the Astoria ciders. Like maybe I'm used to drinking more tarts. And even our friend Greg Hall at Virtue, he made this. I'm talking about his Sidra, because Sidra de Nava, because it's very tart for an American cider.
For us, it's Greg came to Asturias. We spent a whole day visiting producers, and I will try to show him how is the Asturias cider. Yesterday, I tasted Sidra de Nava. For us, his cider could be the first step for our cider. That's what the producer said yesterday. Sidra de Nava is properly, they say that it's the first, after the first fermentation, Asturias cider. That's what we think about Sidra de Nava.
So it's like a baby.
We make two fermentations, alcoholic and malolactic. And yesterday, that's their opinion, that the Sidra de Nava tastes like a cider after just the first fermentation. That's what they say.
And John, how does that work for you? I mean, when you were going there, did you have to get an education in you know, their traditional methods?
Do
they do when they make cider too? I mean, you have two fermentations. I mean, this is crazy. What? Right, Sean?
For us, absolutely. It's normal.
Yeah. I've never heard that
before.
What was the
second type of fermentation?
Malolactic.
Malolactic.
Oh. Yeah.
And that happens in a barrel?
Well, it depends. Most of them now, they use the inox big barrels. And some, traditionally, we use the wooden barrels, big, huge ones. But the wood doesn't give nothing to the cider. It's just
what
a
kind
traditional
of wood do you
way
use?
Of worry of.
There's a particular type of
roble.
It's a chestnut, but these are very old, very large barrels.
Yeah.
They each hold 20,000 liters, so they stand maybe 14
wow,
or 16
sounds,
feet
sounds
high.
Like they're beautiful.
Yeah.
And they've been in use for so long that really all of the tannins or anything else
it's been sort of sucked out of it,
leached out.
How long? Yeah. I mean, how long are we talking here?
Decades, I would say. How old?
About what?
The
how long
tonales,
have you had the barrels?
How long have they been used?
Oh, they use them all the life of the producer. Yes, because now it's not easy to find that huge barrels. Mm. So they take care with them. They clean it every time. Mm. And they.
Do you think it would it, does it influence the taste? Would it matter since they're so old? Would it matter if you're using plastic or metal?
Well, for them, now they all have wooden barrels because it's romantic. Mm. But the truth is they have the Inox huge barrels to store the cider because they can control the temperature, they can stop the fermentation if they need it, and they can make the mixture between the barrels. So for them it's
science and progress quiet. And all sorts of great things.
John, so in your travels in Asturias, is there a typical cidery, like the way it's set up, you know, or are they different? Is some one modern, one's traditional? You know what I mean? Like the technology they're using,
I think there's probably a distinction to be made between the producer and then the cideria, which is the person, the retailer who serves it, the bar. The producer is, well, I guess they're both quite traditional. I mean, when you walk into a typical cider bar in Asturias, it's low, it's a bit dank and smelly, like cider, stale cider, and it's very much a traditional feel. Like, you know immediately that you've walked into an Asturian bar. I'm not sure if that goes to your question, but unforgettable experience. If you ever get the opportunity to go to Asturias, I highly recommend it.
I'm sorry, do they only dedicate themselves to serving cider, or is it?
Most do. They would have like one or two ciders that are kind of the house ciders, which they serve. They may also offer a beer or a wine, but in Asturias, most of the drink is cider, and so these are kind of tangential.
So that's what, when you're thinking of opening a cider bar, you're attempting to replicate an Asturian cider bar?
That was actually one of our thoughts. It kind of evolved over time into, well, we would open up a bar that would represent ciders from all over the world. So there's very specific cider traditions. In France, for example, they tend to serve cider in porcelain bowls and serve them with crepes. And in Spain, they've pour them from a height, the escanciar, and they would serve them with a traditional Spanish food. And then there are similar traditions in the UK or American cider. So our idea was to kind of open up a bar that would represent all of those traditions faithfully. Unfortunately, like I said, it didn't work out at that point. I mean, it's not to say that it won't happen sometime in the future, but for now, we're focusing on the import side of the business.
I will say, you guys done a great job in just a couple of short years. You've turned a lot of us on to an unusual style that we now think is typical, which is these sour ciders from Spain. Have you tried any of them, Sean?
No, I was hoping to try them
today. Yeah, come on.
Sean, I'm coming after
you. And then, Brett. Dave, you guys working with Merchant Devin, are there any ciders you import besides the Sam Smith organic cider?
No, Sam Smith is the only cider that we actually bring in.
Which, by the way, we're drinking right now, and it is delicious.
It's nice.
It's nice.
I'm going to give a shout-out. There's a regular listener. He's got a site called ciderguide.com, and he did a breakdown of all the different ciders, and you know, you should check it out, ciderguide.com. Hey, we're going to take a short break. We're going to play some music, and we'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network.
So, you like good beer. Whether you're a craft beer pro or just had your first sip of an IPA, GreatBrewers.com is your number one beer resource on the internet. GreatBrewers.com bridges the gap between the world's great brewers and the consumers who enjoy their products. With so much information and misinformation out there, GreatBrewers.com focuses on education and leaves no stone unturned. Take the Great Beer Test on their website and browse through an extensive product catalog. Download their mobile Beer Cloud app, which includes a GPS beer finder, a beer sommelier, and descriptions for over 5,000 different brews. What are you waiting for? Back up that passion for craft beer with some solid information and education. Visit GreatBrewers.com today.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, guess what? I just looked at the heritageradionetwork.org. There's a new website. It's pretty cool. It's broken down into special features, and still, Beer Sessions Radio is right up there. So If you want to learn about beer insider, check out Beer Sessions Radio. But the Heritage Radio Network is pretty cool. I mean, you guys, Sean, you guys are distributed by greatbrewers.com. They're one of our sponsors.
Union Beer Distributors, absolutely.
That's right. So go to heritageradionetwork.org, and I think there's going to be a membership drive soon, too.
Yeah.
Which,
and they're also doing a pretty neat little festival coming up in November as well. They're, what's it called, the Craft Beer Experience?
Yes, that's what they're calling it now.
That's great. I mean,
Dave, why don't you grab the mic? Come on.
Sure.
So, Dave, introduce yourself.
Dave Rodriguez with Merchant of Inn.
And you're a cool guy. You keep wanting to join in. So give yourself the mic. Come on.
Hey, go ahead.
I got it, baby. It's right here.
You keep leaning over, man.
Sorry.
So with Drink and Sell, you got Craft Beer Experience coming November 13th.
And 14th.
And 14th. So the 12th.
Or 12th and 13th.
The 13th is the consumer. So if you want to get tickets.
Used to be an industry-only tasting, and this year they decided to do it open it up to the public.
Which is a phenomenal experience because you're having all of the brewers that are there, the owners of the company, in one fell swoop. You can walk in and meet Sam Smith.
Yeah, exactly.
How many of your producers are coming for that event?
Sam Smith is here, and then our national sales guy, Joe Lipa, is going to be there as well. Not quite sure who else is going to be making it. A few people requested a couple of monks from Orval, but I don't think that's going to happen. So,
did you ever get the monks from Orval to come over?
I don't think so.
So tell us a few things about Merchant of Inn, just a couple of the main brands you guys have. I mean, we know Orval. We know Sam Smith.
Sure. Merchant of Inn's one of the oldest beer specialty importers in the country. They've been around since 1978. First came on when they introduced Sam Smith into the U.S. The brands that they're known for are, you know, pretty much the iconic brands that have inspired a lot of the American craft brewers. Orval, Westmalle, Rochefort, Samuel Smith, Eyinger from Germany. And then they have some, you know, other breweries, you know, such as Pincus, specialty, you know, organic brewer, Greens, which is a gluten-free beer and quite popular nowadays. Dubac, which is a newer brand within our family. It's specialized in white ale. And then Trecor, which is from Scotland and probably one of the oldest, I think, the oldest house.
Is Trecor or Trequer?
Trequer. Trequer. It's the one of the oldest houses in the UK, from my understanding. So it's been around for 300-400 years.
It's a long, long way to Trequer from here.
500, a long time. So.
But going back to cider, so Ben's here from Queen's Kickshaw. Ben, you just poured us an interesting cider from Maine, right?
Yeah, actually, it's called Hoboken Station from Maine. It's made by Oyster River Wine Growers. This one's great. I mean, I love it. It's dry. It's got some really nice acidity, some, you know, wonderful balanced tannins. It's fermented with native yeasts to Maine, and they use cider apples, esoteric apples, you know.
That's great. So you've really done a nice job of sourcing different ciders at your bar.
Well, thank you.
It's great. Well, hey, let's pour that. You open that large Angry Orchard. We're going to introduce our next guest. If you guys are
Straw
gonna,
man.
If you have headphones, we're going to talk. If you're not, you're going to miss it out. But and to our listeners, this is a call-in guest, special guy David Sipes from Angry Orchard Cidery. David, thanks for calling in.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm Jimmy Carboni. I'm the host and our special co-host tonight.
Hey, how's it going? This is Sean from the Bronx Brewery.
Sean McCain. So he just what are you guys pouring right now, Sean? What's that?
This is Straw Man, and I haven't tasted it yet, but it is definitely carbonated. But
yeah,
I think
Straw Man is a wonderful cider. If you have time to taste through the whole range, I wouldn't necessarily start there. But if we're picking and choosing on that one, that's a great cider. Inspired. Kind of a little bit about the brand first. Angry Orchard's been a national brand until about early 2012, and we launched initially with our Angry Orchard Crisp, the traditional dry, and apple ginger. And I think you've got a couple of those in front of you. And with the initial just response from the consumer and the cider drinker and enthusiasm for new flavors, we kind of expanded on that and went with the Cider House collection, of which the Straw Man's a part of, and that's inspired by traditional French and English country cider.
Hey, David, a couple of questions. We've been doing some, we know a little bit about what you guys are doing with Angry Orchard.
Sure.
So tell us about what apples are in your typical mix, because I heard that you guys are also getting apples from other countries.
Yeah, that's correct. We started out, and, you know, we would tinker with recipes and processes and different apples. for about 15 years, and really just found northern France, the Normandy and Brittany region, and some of the culinary apples that are grown in Italy to be really spectacular and well-suited for cider production. We've really just honed in on traditional cider varieties. And, when cider kind of went by the wayside after Prohibition, so too did a lot of the traditional cider apples. And so we're looking for tannin and acidity structures, similar to some of the things a winemaker would be looking for, we're looking for in our apples. So we currently are producing the entire cider range with apples from northern Italy, the Tyrol region, Alto Adige, also a really well-known wine-growing region, and Normandy and Brittany.
Great. Hey, is it true that the cider in America is growing like 70% a year or something?
Yeah, I don't know where the figures are for this year over last, but certainly from 2011 to 2012, about 65% growth, and it's just really exciting, fun time to be a cider maker, fun time to be involved in the industry.
So now you guys are you're owned by Boston Beer Company, Sam Adams. Why did you guys decide to get into cider?
You know, we've been tinkering with it for years, and really just we're about anything, fermentation and flavors and characteristics. And we had a recipe that we were really happy with, and kind of put them out there. And so it's something that we've been at some level or another, in part personal consumption. We just love cider. So we've been dabbling and thinking of the recipes, and it's something we've been working on for a long time, and it seemed like the time was right. There was a market and a demand out there. Drinkers were looking for something new. A lot of parallels with craft beer, with the growth of wine, with the growth of cocktails and spirits, and looking for some new flavors. So just a good opportunity. The market seemed right for a new cider.
It was crisp apple. Is that the first one that you guys came out with?
Correct. Yeah, that was crisp apple, apple ginger, and traditional dry were all part of what we refer to as sort of the core styles.
The
crisp quickly became the number one. In fact, it's the number one selling cider in the U.S. on IRI data. So it's doing really well. It really seems to have met the demands of the cider drinker.
So
that one is a little more luscious, fruit forward, a little more of a kind of a ripe apple taste. A little bit sweet on the palate, but really complemented with a nice balanced acidity on the finish. So not cloying.
David, let me jump. So like day to day, like what are the jobs that you do as at Angry Orchard?
A lot of it's about the ingredients and making sure we've got the apples to make our cider. Kind of recipe design and working on different fermentation processes and tinkering with different yeast strains and really trying to just nail a profile that works and meets what our drinkers are looking for.
Now, the other day when we tasted a bunch of Spanish ciders, someone said that the skins of the apples give tannins, tannin flavor to the cider. I'd never heard that. Besides that, are there any other flavor issues that you have to deal with when you're making cider?
Yeah, I think in general, from our perspective, it's really all about balancing the various flavors that come into the cider. Absolutely, the tannins are coming from the skin and from within the structure of the apple itself. And the cider apples, the bittersweet apples we use from Normandy and Brittany, they're almost inedible by themselves. They're just very astringent, very tannic. And so we balance that with the juicy sweetness of the culinary varieties. And we're also looking for things like acidity. We recently... I believe you've got the Angry Orchard Sinful in front of you. That's our new seasonal release for the fall and the winter. And that's made with domestic apples for a bit of a departure from where we started. And that was the first one we launched that was with U.S. apples. A little juicier, a little fruitier characteristic. The U.S. varieties tend to be a little less acidic, lower pH and things like that, lower acidity. So as a result, the higher perceived sweetness. That one kind of comes through a little more appley, a little more juicy, complemented with the bright cinnamon character and a little heat on the finish. So we're really just working to get a balance of all those different components of sweetness, of acidity, of tannin, the bitterness, and really trying to get a balance.
Yeah. David, are there any other ciders that you like that are on the market that are like more boutique-y or, from traditional countries or anything?
I've tasted through a number of them. I try not to mention other brands specifically, but there's so many great ciders out there.
You have to on our show.
Be a team player.
from the true farmstead and the, you know, real farmstead level. Some great ciders out there to some of the traditional French ciders and such. And I just think there's such a wide range, and it's just been a neat process of discovery as well. It's so unknown as a beverage category in the U.S. You can spend a lot of time just kind of working your way through some of the new offerings in the U.S. right now.
Great. David, just hang with us. We're going to – you're welcome to stay on there if you want. We're going to keep talking, okay? We've got cider maker. We've got people here from Spain, England, and New York. So, all right. David, you're Merchant Devin. You're kind of new to this, to cider.
Yes.
What questions would you ask a cider maker?
Well, luckily I worked with Union Beer Distributors for 3 years, so got exposed to some of the best cider in the world from Spain, from France, and England. So, what's always intrigued me is the whole processing and, you know, any extra processing involved with cider. You know, is there any extra sugars added to the whole fermentation process to add a certain sweetness to it from the various cider makers from France that offer up and Spain that offer up more of a funky cider, some of the American ones as well that do a really good job to the more mainstream commercial available ciders. Do they do anything extra to their ciders to make it a little sweeter?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think anytime part of the game is you know, there may be sugars used to adjust the amount of natural sugars you have from the apples coming in for, on the front end of fermentation. There's some limits to what you want to do there. But absolutely, adding back juice, different kinds of juice to add sweetness at the end. If you let a cider go out completely dry and completely attenuated, they can be really, you know, harshly acidic, very astringent, very drying. And so we'll kind of play some tunes on the what we call back sweetening and actually adding juice back to the finished cider. And an example of that is Crisp. Angry Orchard Crisp has some juice added back, and that helps provide a really lively, juicy kind of sweetness to it.
All right. And here's Ben from Queen's Kickshop. Ben, what do you look for when you're buying ciders? Because you have a wide range of ciders, a lot of boutique ciders. What are you looking for in flavor?
We mainly look for quality and variety. We like to ask ourselves the kinds of questions like where does this cider come from? How does it represent the terroir? Where does it, and the place from which it came? What's the tradition involved in making this cider? What kind of experience does the cider maker have? We have kind of a eclectic list. We're a bit selective. We don't have every cider that's available. So we taste everything, of course, first.
What would you compare whatever else is on the market? What would you compare Angry Orchard to? Because it's different categories.
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of a mass marketed cider for sure. I would compare this to some of the other mass marketed ones like Crispin cider, which they tend to be a little bit sweeter. And there's definitely a place for those. We have Wandering Angus cider is on our list. It's kind of a mass marketed cider that's available everywhere. And because of the price point and because of the ease with which it is to put it in your mouth and swallow it, there's definitely a way to get new people into the world of cider. It's kind of like a gateway drug, these sweeter ciders.
So how would you compare it to beer? Like, let's say you think it's a summer product, you think it's a fall product?
I think it's a year-round product. I definitely think it's a year-round product. At least for us, I don't really see our sales change that much year round as far as cider goes. I mean, people think of it as a fall time beverage because that's when the apples tend to be harvested, and that's when you see all the apples at the market. But people are drinking them at Kickshaw all year round.
Yeah, we'd agree with that certainly too. I mean, it's perceived as a fall beverage based on the harvest time, but it's also a really refreshing drink. Cider in general offers some balance and some complexity, but also generally really drinkable. So a nice spring and summertime as well.
All right. Hey, David, thanks for coming on. Thank you so much, and we're enjoying your ciders. And we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes here on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
I got a restless
Hey, hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. Hey, guess what? HeritageRadioNetwork.org has a really great new website. It's a little different than it was, but I like it. And there's some featured profiles and stuff. And we're here in Cider Week, so let's talk. We got people from Spain, England, America, Queens. We just talked with the cider maker, Dave Sipes, from Angry Orchard Cider. And we got Sean McCain. Sean, what do you think of these ciders? These aren't. We don't really have a wide range of ciders
today.
This is new to
me. Like, I am. I have to say that, like, cider and I have. We're not. It's not like we're like best friends. It's not. We haven't been in the same room together enough. You know, and that's why I was really excited about today, so I could, you know, rub elbows, maybe make out a little bit with a couple. John, I'm still mad at you, man. How could you come and not bring the beautiful ciders from España?
Have me back.
No, we will.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's very interesting, the difference between, like, a dry cider, a funky cider, a farmhouse cider. Like, these are all things that, as a brewer and as a beer lover, that I understand just because of those experiences. So my eyes are open, and I have a lot of friends that have gluten allergies that, like, I always sort of cater to if I'm going to have a dinner, make sure that I have a good cider. I used to travel a lot through the Finger Lakes, and there was Bellwether Cidery. Just phenomenal.
Yeah, that's really great.
Phenomenal stuff. So I would just go by and just bring back two cases of cider and always have that away for anybody that had a gluten allergy.
Well, one thing I know about I mean, Cider Week that we know in New York, it started 3 years ago. It was trying to get a broader reach, you know, showcasing some French and other ciders. But really, 2 years ago, it really was focused on the Northeastern, like, you know, farm-based ciders. You're growing your apples, and the idea is to support the farmers who are growing apples. But the world of cider is bigger than that. And again, it's like, yeah, the Angry Orchard was nice. The Straw Man was – I like that. I like the Sam Smith Organic Cider, too. And I'm definitely interested in these traditional regions, you know, like Asturias. But then also still my heart goes to, and I think that Ben and I agree from Queens Kickshaw, I mean, in America right now, there's these small, you know, they're apple growers like Farnham Hill. And what's the one from Massachusetts? Is it West County?
West County. They specialize in a lot of single varietal ciders.
Yeah.
And they make it work. I haven't spoken with them at length about it, but it's incredible. They've got at least four or five different single varietal ciders, and most people that you talk to will say, you know, in the cider industry, that you have to blend cider. You have to get the acids and the tannins and the sweetness from different apples, that no one apple actually carries all those characteristics after fermentation perfectly, and they do an amazing job just like carrying through a great, great balance after the fermentation with just one or even two ciders.
You know, there's a great article, Karen Shimizu, she's at Savoir Magazine. She wrote a great article about cider. And she quoted this guy, Ben Watson, and I haven't read any of his books, but I don't know if you've ever read a book about cider. You know, we've had some great books on about beer, but it's from, and it basically says it's ridiculously easy to make at home. But in her article, she really surveyed some of our favorites. I mean, she mentioned Farnham Hill, Eves, Bellwether, which West County Cider from Massachusetts, which I haven't had. And she was going to be a guest, but couldn't come on. But, you know, so a lot of people, I think Cider Week has created this interest in people talking about it. But again, the biggest thing is the change in palates. Like, for me, it's like, wow, these Angry Orchard, that's, you know, that's a nice cider. But I actually want these, like, really interesting sour and other ciders that you guys are bringing in. So
it encourages me to, like, go seek out, like, a beer dinner. Whereas before, I always would just think of cider as something that would be a little bit more refreshing, something that maybe a little lower alcohol. But now, tasting the complexities and the yeast and understanding that, well, yeast is yeast, right? I mean, it's going to dictate a lot of the flavor profile, and especially if you have a nice house yeast and you know what you're doing with it. This is an Oyster River.
Let's give John from Marona, give you one more chance. Give us a list of some of your favorite esoteric ciders that you're importing from Asturias.
Okay. Tell us about well, Aaron. I don't want to be... you know, too self-promotional, but Valdeonon is an excellent cider, as well as the Castañón. Those are two very traditional examples of what a Spanish cider could be. We also carry some very nice sparkling ciders, Valverán and Emilio Martinez, as well as the Villacubera.
So how did you pick those? I mean, are they just like, hey, great, take our ciders and sell them in America?
Well, basically, when we first got into the business, the first step was really to go to Asturias, and we met with Begonia here, who was nice enough to introduce us to all of the producers, and based on quality and availability and how much they make and all those other considerations, we decided out of maybe 25 or 30, we pared it down to maybe 5 or 6 or 7 different producers that we would carry. So that said, I do want to emphasize that we only don't only carry Spanish ciders. We have German and French and American ciders as well. So if you're interested, we like to think ourselves as the place to be to experience cider in all of its
forms. Definitely making an impact, and I love working with you guys. But let's go back to Spain. So outside of Asturias, if I'm in, Madrid or Barcelona, if I said Asturias, would people identify that with cider?
Yes, of course. The cider is in Asturias. In Spain, if you say sidra, they will say sidra de Asturias. So for us, it's part of our identity.
So sidra assumes that it's from Asturias.
Yes, more than in other region in Spain.
So similar to Normandy region in France?
Yes, it's the same. But for example, the question is that we produce amount of liters of cider. The average right now for the producers is around 1.5 million liters, but we have some that who are producing 6 million liters. So, and I have told you that we used to drink the 80% of that amount of liters.
Good for you.
So, so
I have to come visit.
So it's normal that when you talk about cider in Spain, they think about Asturias.
And Begonia. So, okay, I have a few more questions. So, okay, so when do you harvest the apples? In the fall?
Yeah, they are right now. That's why we came with the DOP, Sidra de Asturias. We came to New York to the Cider Week. But some of them producers, the owners, they cannot come with us because they are producing cider right now. They are buying apples right now to the rural producers that they have around the farmhouses and everything. So they began probably next week to produce cider. So now and it's impossible for them to be.
So if you're harvesting apples now,
yeah,
how long do you...
How long does fermentation take?
Fermentation and storage.
How long can you store the apples?
Maybe the first fermentation could take 2 weeks. And it depends on the weather because it's changing in Asturias. So last year they were really worried because the fermentation was too much slow. Mm. So the first fermentation could take 2 weeks or 3 weeks depending on the weather. And the second fermentation, they control it sometimes. Mm.
So on average, how long would the second fermentation take?
How
long would the second fermentation on average take?
Maybe to 1 month or 2 months. Yeah, it takes.
So 6 to 9 weeks, basically.
Yeah, probably. They will finish to produce cider at December, something like that. And they store it. And after some months, they mix the ciders from different barrels.
Blending.
Looking for that flavor. Mm. We call that el palo, you know?
El palo.
It means that in...
What does it mean?
It means that...
Palo means stick.
Yeah.
Stick?
And yes. It's the flavor that the consumers recognize the producer. So they always look for their own flavor because we don't drink just one cider. If you go to a cidreria, the bar where we used to drink cider, they could have 4 or 5 different kinds of cider. And are people who only wants to drink that palo or that other from another cider house.
And do you use different types of yeast?
The yeast is natural. It's from the apples. Yeah, they don't use artificial yeast.
Okay.
They leave the juice to go to be cider.
Now one thing, I want to get Sam back on one more before we end. So Sam, you guys, you know, the culture of England inside. Where are the main cider producing regions in England?
Cider's got a very long heritage. It's a very popular drink in the UK. I think it was brought over in the year 1066 by the Normans, and they predominantly apple growing and cider making is done in the southwest of England, areas like Herefordshire. So we're actually in a different area. We're in the north of England. So I like to think we're pioneers for cider in the north of England, and making great stuff up there.
So how do you guys do it? I mean, you guys are buying juice? Are you buying apples? You know, what's the process for the Sam Smith organic cider, which I like? I think it's pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I guess for us, cider making is a bit of a new venture, really. Well, no, it's not that new. We've been making cider for a number of years now, but we're a brewery. We're one of the oldest breweries in the UK, and we've got an extraordinary heritage in brewing benchmark beers, in particular classic English ales. So whereas for us, cider is something that's a little bit newer, a little bit more sort of pushing the boundaries. And but cider has always been a very popular drink with us. So what we do is we've kind of taken our approach to brewing beer and applied it to cider. So with us, the way we brew beer, in terms of the ingredients, it's all about having the absolutely best natural ingredients. So all of our beers are brewed solely from natural ingredients, no adjuncts, no chemicals, no pesticides, nothing like that, totally natural. And actually, a lot of our beers are brewed solely from organic ingredients, which are registered with the Soil Association in Europe and USDA in the US. And we've taken that approach and applied it to cider. So with our cider, we brew it solely from natural ingredients and actually organic ingredients. Our organic bottled cider we sell over here is solely organic ingredients. And I think that's something that's really important, actually, because you know, a lot of apples, a lot of fruit, in particular apples, has a lot of pesticides on it, a lot of chemicals that go into it, a lot of ripening agents. Obviously, I can't speak for all apples, but a lot of apples do. So ours, you know, I think it's great that we can be safe in the knowledge that ours is totally organic. And so we buy in organic apple juice, and that comes from various sources, and then that's what we ferment at our brewery.
Another question. So we heard a little bit about the ciderias, the cider culture in Asturias. What's the cider culture like in Britain?
Cider culture is, like I say, it's a very historic popular drink in the UK, been around for 1,000 years. But it's I'd say interestingly, it's a drink that's growing in popularity at the moment, much in the same way that it is over here in the US. I think it's increasingly something that women like to drink. I'm a brewer. I wish all women would drink beer, but sadly they don't. Often cider is perceived a slightly more feminine drink. And, you know, you go to the pub, you drink a pint of bitter, or actually maybe the alternative is have a pint of cider. And that's grown in popularity in recent years. And there's a great variety in different styles of cider produced in the UK. Down in the southwest, they produce something called Scrumpy, which is quite a strong cider that's quite sweet and has quite a little vinegary taste. And then you get something like ours, which is something nicely in the middle, a nice medium dry cider. And then we have sort of mass market ciders as well, which are very sweet and a lot of artificial chemicals in them.
And I've seen there's some great real small boutique cider makers in England too.
Yes, there are.
Our friend Tom Oliver, he's got he also makes a Perry, which is different than cider. I don't know if you've had that, Ben. I'm sure you have. And I saw a video the other day. There's a guy in Somerset, which you got to just Google Somerset, you know, cider making video, and you're going to see. I think I don't know his last name, but it's one of the coolest things. Just do it. Google Somerset cider making video Somerset because he's one of the old school real. So there's great traditions in all these countries, and we've tried to bring that together a little bit tonight. We'll be back on November 12th. We'll actually have a full interview with Steve Wood. From Farnham Hill in New Hampshire. And I'm going to give you a rundown of some events coming up. Beer Sessions Radio will be at Saturday in Williamsburg. We'll be at the Alt-toberfest. You can check it out on goodbrewsteel.com. At 3 o'clock or 3:30, there's a stein hoisting competition. There's bands. Whole point of that is Oktoberfest is over, but hey, we're in Williamsburg. We're having some fun. But come by on Saturday. Check it out, Good Brew Steel, the Williamsburg Oktoberfest, Alt-toberfest. Cider Week's still going on, and it's just getting better. You know, Ben, what do you guys have going on at Queen's Kickshaw for the rest of the week?
Sure. We got two nights of a cider dinner coming up tomorrow night and Thursday night, and there's still tickets available on brownpapertickets.com. And actually, tomorrow night, I believe you're going to be coming over to the Queen's Kickshaw for a high pour competition, essentially. We're going to be doing some escanciar, which is the high pouring method of basically
what's
aerating.
What's it called, escanciar?
Escanciar.
Yeah.
It's
high pour. Yep.
Yeah, why don't you describe what escanciar is?
Well, it's basically the traditional Spanish method of pouring cider, where the pourer will hold one hand with the bottle extended high over their head and the other hand down by their knee with the glass. And the whole idea is to pour a thin stream into the glass and not spill any, and at the same time impart some effervescence into the cider.
So that's a cool idea. So you guys have about nine. How many people are nine cider makers going around the city all week just pouring cider, right?
Yes,
high pour.
Yes, we have eight cider makers and one professional purer. She's going, it's a girl, Natalia, and she's a great pouring cider. And we are going to offer all the people in New York cider and how to pour it.
That's great. And Sam, you saw that too. You saw it the other day. What did you think of the high pouring? That's what I call it, high pouring. It was a little messy, wasn't it?
I was very impressed, to be honest. I've got to say, I gave it a shot, and most of mine ended up on the floor. But, yeah, pretty good, pretty impressive by the people who do it well, yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, check out Cider Week New York. You can learn more about it. And actually, Jimmy's number 43, Thursday night. You guys are coming by after 8:30. So there's a lot of fun going on. One more thing. There's the Colorado Craft Beer Tap Takeover and Charity Raffle. You know, there was some weather issues in Colorado, and Union Beer is behind it, and check it out and that. Sean, anything else from you?
See, I'll be at a Punktoberfest at Great South Bay Brewery for their beer festival.
When's that? On Saturday?
Saturday. Yeah.
Everybody's got a something
Toberfest. Come out to Suffolk County, baby. Come out to the Long Island and have a lot of fun there. And then we have the release of our Black Pale Ale, which is making its return at the gate on November 21st. So you got time to think about that. Mission is free.
And I didn't really get to represent. I mean, Colorado's had some disasters, and I wish I could say more about it, but there's definitely a lot of sympathy for that. So go out and support your Colorado breweries, Breckenridge, Left Hand, Great Divide, and Oscar Blues. And the proceeds will benefit the Left Hand Brewing Foundation.
And also the New York City Brewers Guild. We're having our big fundraiser on December 5th at the Brooklyn Brewery. All the guild members will be there with some special beer. We're raising money so that way we can put on a phenomenal number 6 New York Craft Beer Week next February. And so please come to the Brooklyn Brewery December 5th. Put it on your calendar. Circle it. Stamp it. Tattoo it on your box.
The one thing I'll tell you is that there's so many great things happening in New York City, whether it's Cider Week, Beer Week. And the best place to go is goodbrewseal.com and greatbrewers.com. Check it out. I'd like to thank our sponsors again. Greatbrewers.com, who've helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. And Beer Sessions Radio is supported by the Good Brew Seal. You can find Beer Sessions Radio on Facebook page, Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. And you can also follow us on Twitter at @beer_sessions. If you like this podcast, you can also check us out on iTunes. And one thing I'll say, Heritage Radio Network is growing. It's awesome. But, you know, you can listen to it live, you can archive it, or you can go on iTunes. So there's a lot of great shows. And thank you for listening.
Thanks
to Ben. Who else is on? Look at the list there. There's Ben. There's Sean.
Hey, now.
There's John. There's Sam. And there's Begonia. Thanks for joining me. And Dave, thanks for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Jack Inslee, Bree O'Connor, and engineer tonight. He's out there. It's time for us to have a good night, guys. See you later. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website, or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.